I've just got headaches and I couldn't get rid of the headaches. And I went to the doctor and the doctor sent me to have a scan and I went back to work and I got rung by the police to say, stop working and get somebody to drive you to the hospital now.
At the hospital, Belinda learnt that she had a large aneurysm in her brain and could have had a stroke in the car on the way there. A week later, the aneurysm was removed, but she'd lost her speech centre. Although she could understand language, the injury to her brain meant that she couldn't express herself anymore.
I woke up from the operation, I thought, oh, well, I'm alive, I haven't died on the table, so... And I couldn't speak. The only word I could speak was sandwich. And my husband loves me saying that every word I was saying was sandwich. And I thought it was meaning something else. So with losing the speech centre, you don't remember your passwords. You don't know some of the information, like times tables. And I've got teaching qualifications in mathematics, so it's very awful to find out that I couldn't do sums, multiplication sums. So I had to relearn all that and relearn a whole stack of things. And learned to speak to, say stories to my daughter, and it's very hard when you can't actually read the words.
3 years later, in a different suburb of Newcastle in New South Wales, a man called Brian Shaw suffered a stroke.
I had some friends who said, no, we'll wait for an ambulance. I said, no, you won't. You put me in the car. I mean, they had to carry me out of the car because the whole right side stopped. And I was drawling, but they understood. So they got me there. I couldn't even tell the doctor what was wrong with me when I went into the hospital with the stroke.
It wasn't Brian's first brain injury. Years before, he'd been in a severe car accident.
And I lost my voice. I actually lost one voice cord. And John Hunter Hospital said, well, I want you to stop whispering. You must start humming. And they taught me to hum. I couldn't talk other than whisper, but I could hum. And never mind how long, but gradually that turned into singing. So I always had a link with music and what I'm doing. I don't know why it works, I just know it does.
Brian had been a musician when he was young, and after he became an engineer, he still liked to play music. After the accident, his doctors had suspected that music therapy could help Brian's recovery, and it did. So when he had a stroke, Brian knew exactly what to do as soon as he got to the hospital.
In there, once again, I listened to music very quickly. I got the people that knew me, quick, bring my music in. So I used to stick earphones on and just submerge.
One day, Brian and Belinda both received a letter in the mail. It was from a young PhD candidate called Bernadette Mathias. The kind of relief that Brian had experienced from music after his stroke was a topic that completely fascinated Bernadette. She's a speech pathologist, but also a singer, and she had a theory about how her two passions might be connected. Her letter contained an offer that Brian and Belinda might have found hard to refuse, a chance to help heal the damage their brains had suffered. They both had aphasia, which means their speaking skills were severely impacted. And Bernadette believed that they could learn how to speak again if they first learned how to sing.
Many years ago, even when they were discovering the different types of aphasia, some patients were of interest who may have had all their musical ability dissolved, if you like. Their speech was fine, but music was removed. And so that came up with the idea of speech and music and different things being processed by different parts of the brain. It's believed the idea that music and creativity is on the right side of the brain and speech and language is on the left side of the brain. It's a fairly gross generalisation, which now we're starting to understand isn't as clear cut. Now, it has been found that some people without speech, say with aphasia, can still sing. So that's, I suppose, the exciting possibility for people who've lost their speech, that there may be a path through singing.
And more than that, the effect could be increased when people sang together. So Bernadette decided to start a choir, with her as the choir master. But the first step was finding people who actually wanted to sing.
I mean, it's hard to expect people who don't have any voice to go, yeah, okay, I'll join a choir, or people who may not have an aphasia or speech difficulty but have other difficulties, physical or emotional, after stroke. Often depression is a large part of post-stroke recovery. Again, a third of strokes tend to have difficulties with mood and depression. So those people too mightn't feel like dragging themselves out to join a choir. So I understood that was difficult in the first place to get people. Having said that, though, those who did put their hand up did it with extreme enthusiasm. And a lot of them said to me, I've never sung a note before in my life, but I'll give it a whirl, you know. One, to just try something else to help myself out, but very often as well to help research and the future of understanding of stroke.
Belinda had had 4 years of regular therapy for her aphasia by the time Bernadette's letter arrived. At first, she was pretty disappointed to receive it.
It's great, but I misinterpreted it because one of the words, I think it had a stroke within 1 year. And I thought, oh no, I can't be in the stroke choir. And she said that I can be in the stroke choir. And I thought, yay!
When I had the stroke about 18 months ago and I got the invitation from Bernadette, I thought, music put me back together after the car accident. This sounds like a really good thing. So for me, it's very powerful. And when somebody like Bernadette comes along and says, I'm going to figure out how this helps people, I'm with her 100%.
This group of singers became the Brainwaves Choir. After Brian and Belinda, others joined slowly. The choir was unlike any therapy Belinda had ever gone through.
The aphasia group, they just introduce us and ask us to talk in the room. But the choir, everybody can sing everything at the same time. Yeah, and it's very good. My daughter now sings to me with all the words that I've been trying to practice. And God, she's got she needs a little practice with her voice.
Being this time of year, I did just want to say we've thrown in a few Christmas carols, of course.
Bernadette was both the researcher and choir master, and slowly she began to see people's lives changing before her eyes.
I suppose I was certainly moved by one gentleman in the choir who has very little speech at all, only has probably two sounds he can say, so they're only really sounds or vowel sounds, not even words. But he was so keen to come every week. His wife would come with him as well, because we have invited carers to take part in the choir as well, and we're also measuring the effects on carers' well-being, that sort of thing. But anyway, his wife wasn't sure how beneficial it would be for him, but as I said, this gentleman was keen, and after the very first rehearsal, she came up to me at the end and she said, I heard words, Bernadette. And she was thrilled to bits by that. Now, we don't know what is producing this. It could be, there's a big part of automatic speech can come out in singing. Songs that you learnt when you were younger can automatically come out, and it mightn't have a lot of intention or meaning attached, but for a partner to hear the voice of her husband that she hasn't heard for a long time in words, for someone to hear their own voice or a more fluent speech than they've had in the past, is very powerful stuff. She also said that he, weeks down the track, that fellow used to get his words out and practice singing every week before choir, and oohed and ahed his way through these songs. A lot of people lose their friends after stroke for various reasons, particularly when communication is involved. It's very hard to to get back and have a conversation with that person again who can't give many words back, and it's really challenging for both members of the dialogue, and just for all the other changes, people's personalities can change, all different things, and so friendships can fall away. So within the choir, that's given back. I particularly noticed, I think it was around week seven or eight, I really felt this shift where it felt like a choir, where it felt like a team.
It doesn't matter if on your own you may sound questionable, if in the team you sound good. It's very uplifting and powerful and healing. Above all, it's healing. Because it's depression, in my view, from experience, that's the big threat. I'm gone. I'm finished. I'm lost. A black wall of depression hits you. And anything that gets you around that is a plus. And this got a bunch of us, including me, around that.
It feels very worthwhile when you're actually working with these people, finding out the struggles that people deal with every day, either physically or, as I said, communication, socially, so many things that most of us wander around and take for granted the freedoms that we have.
As I say, this is one of the most powerful healing tools I've ever seen. I think when you're singing, unlike when you're speaking, you have to figure out where your mouth is, where your tongue is, where your, as Bernadette says, where your stomach is. And doing all that, you're actually concentrating in a way you don't when you're talking. So maybe that's part of it. In a choir, you get an extra benefit. There's people around you. If you want to sing in a choir, you must be a team person. You can't be a soloist. You have to listen and balance with the people around you. And sometimes they encourage the daylights out of you.
Yeah.